Hey there, thoughtful listener. Are you looking for introductions to partners, investors, influencers, and clients? Well, I've had private conversations with over 2,000 leaders, asking them where their best business comes from. I've got a free video you can watch with no opt-in required, where I'll share the exact steps necessary to be 100% inbound in your industry over the next 6 to 8 months with no spam, no ads, and no sales. What I teach has worked for me for over 15 years and has helped me create 8 figures in revenue for my own companies. Just head to upmyinfluence.com and watch my free class on how to create endless high-ticket sales appointments. Also, don't forget, the thoughtful entrepreneur is always looking for great guests. Go to upmyinfluence.com and click on podcast. I'd love to have you.
Hello, and welcome back to What I Wish I Learned in Law School. My name is Audrey Earhart, and I am your attorney host today in our amazing podcast, really designed to get you information that you wish you had in law school, right? We want to have this amazing conversation and share our knowledge of attorneys with attorneys of all different practice areas and experiences who can learn from, who we can learn from, we can learn from each other. We know so many of you are not just stepping out of law school, but you're also transitioning among practice areas. Many of you are looking for ways to do things differently in our new-ish virtual world. And so one of my really exciting parts of this is to have these conversations with dynamic attorneys just like you so we can learn from each other. Today, I am joined by the amazing Angela Odinsky, and I'm so glad she's willing to be part of us, part of this conversation. Angela, tell us about your firm. This is great.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. My firm, I have an elder law, estate planning, probate special needs firm. Right now we are headquartered out of Bel Air, Texas, which is, and I also am licensed to practice in Washington, and we're going to be straddling a multi-state practice. That's what one of the things that I'm working on. And so my focus is helping people navigate aging. I think that is like an elder law attorney. That's what we do. We serve a population as opposed to a specific area of law. And we help people with these very weird, unique legal questions that happen when people get older.
It's so interesting you say that too. And isn't that such, so I want to come back to the going to the two states there. But with that being said, what an interesting comment too about it's navigating all the challenges, right? We can't say we just handle traffic tickets or I just draft a will. And as you and I both know, as attorneys, there's never a just in that, you know, there's always more to that. But it's such an interesting aspect that it could be anything. It could be selling a house. It could be eviction. It could be a bankruptcy. It could be insurance. How do you identify that early on? Because I'm guessing that's something you probably didn't learn in law school on what to do there.
Oh, that's very true. And not every elder law attorney practices in every aspect of elder law. It all starts with the intake, right? Getting as much information as possible. And sometimes it's a telephone call. We just have to, like, people don't know what they're asking for. Lay people know they have a legal problem. They know they need a lawyer. They don't know what kind of lawyer that they need. They think they might need something. And so they call me and it's, oh, actually, I'm not the lawyer for you, but I have a referral for you. You need this other kind of lawyer. And so let me get you to that other kind of lawyer. And so I conceive of elder law, sort of the social workers of the legal world. And I was recently at a CLE where an elder law CLE where one of the topics was basically all areas, all legal professions, all areas of law that other people practice in can use the counsel of an elder law attorney at some point in time, because they might run into an issue where capacity is a question and they might not know how to deal with it in their personal injury, in their real estate transaction, in their whatever. And so that's where an elder law attorney really does help come in and can assist other attorneys with these weird legal complexities that they might not even be aware of.
I think that's such a good point. And I think that's something a lot of times we don't think about, that we're making connections and friendships and hopefully making friendships in law school, but also that importance of that lawyer network, other people I can turn to. I ended up in my first solo firm, I ended up meeting a whole lot of criminal defense attorneys because the phone book back in the day, the thing that now is like the dead weight on your, if you still get one, yeah. in your in your hallway. They listed me as a criminal defense attorney, and I was not. So we were constantly sending it out to other people. So it forced me to get out there and really start to build that professional network. But it was the best experience I had because they learned more about me and vice versa. That concept book from Bob Berg, The Go-Giver, you know, how do we help others to help ourselves? And I think that was just such an interesting part. But I think that's, again, something building that network of other attorneys. Because attorneys are also, I find in my experience, some of the best people send us business because they understand what it means to send business, that we have legal representation agreements. It's not just, let me answer the phone and just solve your question right now, because it's complex.
Exactly.
No, I think that's fantastic. But I do want to circle back to this, going to another state or licensed in two states. I could be geographically challenged, but Texas and Washington, I don't think are next door.
They're not.
So tell us.
They're not. There's not necessarily a lot of, although I have to say, what's really interesting is that I find myself, especially in probate, representing a lot of executors who live in Washington.
Interesting.
For Texas probate, which I don't know why that is, but I get those clients. I'm happy to help. Yeah, we have a solid practice in Texas, and we have built from the ground up over the last 9 or so years. I have those attorney networks that we were talking about. I have networks with a bunch of other like senior service industries. We've just built this incredible ecosphere of assistance for elders and their families. And that is something that I have every intention of keeping and continuing to thrive. And my family wants to move to Washington State. And so we are going to be locating there and also keeping the practice open here. So mostly we're going to be going virtual in Texas. I will be spending some time here. Every quarter or so, I'll be here to see people in person that I need to see in person. But for the most part, that's going to be a virtual practice, which allows me to expand my practice to the entire state of Texas and not just be singularly located in one area. And it allows me to help communities that don't necessarily have elder law attorneys in their communities and expand out to these more rural areas. As long as we can keep this sort of technology going, I think COVID taught us a lot of lessons, both good and bad. And one of the good ones is that we can do this. There are far more services that can be offered if people are willing to have these kind of virtual, and if we're willing to rely on technology a little bit more.
Isn't that such an interesting conversation too? Because I think, because I want to come back to also the family aspects. You made an interesting comment there too, but talking about the role of technology in the practice, I agree with you. I think in many ways, COVID normalized what we're seeing now that many of us were already leaning into in the virtual practice of law. I know when I had multiple offices in my first solo firm, we had that giant TV with the big box on the back that now it's not a flat screen. And I would just remote in on Skype, super not cool today, but that's how we got it done. So I could be quote unquote in the room, but I think, yeah, go ahead.
And that's exactly that's how I envision it. Like we'll have, right now I'm the only attorney. The plan is to have another attorney on the ground in Texas, but also to have that big screen where I can remote in and talk to people who are in the office and still be a part of the sort of day-to-day running.
Absolutely. I think it's one of those things that you and I, with a similar background of elder law, we have to constantly tell ourselves, tell our peers, tell other attorneys we work with and professionals, and also our clients. We want to not be ageist, right? Just because a person is a certain age, I think across the board in America, older Americans is defined as 60 and older. If you were to tell my mother that, who's in her 70s, she would be super angry because she does not define herself as older, as an older American. But that being said, technology is becoming more of the normal day-to-day life. That's how we see grandchildren. That's how we connect with our kids who are in school and not living with us. That's how we go to the doctor. I don't know the last time I saw the doctor that I actually filled out a paper form. And I think I don't think law is necessarily behind, but we're catching up in some ways to have this streamlined experience. And I think all of it, and tell me what you think of this, but I think all of it is designed to help us meet our potential clients and then serve our clients where they are. I think that's such a huge part of this conversation.
I think that's true. We can meet them more. And don't get me wrong, there are some areas where you have to be in court in person, trials, juries. I think that's absolutely necessary. But in my area of law where I don't do litigation, I'm not in trial. I am here to walk people through complex legal questions that they have and help them solve these sort of problems that they foresee before anything bad happens. So we're the first line of defense. The transactional attorneys that you don't see on TV, we're the first line of defense to protect you against what you do see on TV.
It's so true. It's not necessarily sexy what we do, but it's it's interesting. I think about some of those Law and Order, the dinging bell and the gavel. Mm-hmm. I think it's some of those cases for those folks who say it's not exciting, you've probably never seen a contested probate. There's nothing more fought over than your grandmother's patio furniture. That's something that's out there. We have to be proactive. Exactly. I was horrified to read a new statistic that just came out about 2 weeks ago. I thought it was bad when we were at 43% that came out of the study during COVID. Only 43% of Americans had an estate plan. And estate plan is the start of elder law planning in many ways. Mm-hmm. But the other side of that, I just saw a new study that said it was 27 people have current estate plans that reflect their wishes. And for you and I, sometimes I think a lot of attorneys don't get that done on their side, but it's also terrifying for us because we know the fallout, what happens on that flip side. And it's interesting because I think I had a radio show also in my first law practice called Elder Law Starts at 18. And I think a lot of folks don't understand that the day that you become an adult, no one can make your decisions. And that's such an important part of the journey. But again, that's how elder law attorneys, again, misnomer by the same just elder law attorneys thinking that you have to be old. It's every age. Right. And we're here for
every age. That's right. It's every stage of life from the time that you turn 18 until the absolute very end when you're on hospice and there are directives in place. That is that you need an estate planning, you need an elder law attorney, somebody around to help navigate those questions.
Absolutely. You need that. And I think also for our listeners who are looking at building their practice, transitioning their practice, mm-hmm. to meet with your estate planning attorney also about your succession plan. What happens to this amazing business that you're creating if something happens to you? And that's a huge part of that journey as well. That's a really critical piece. But I think it's interesting too, where we're talking about the move to the other state and then also the technology harnessing. I would assume, and I shouldn't assume, but I would assume that technology is going to be able to let you have a similar practice, just with different, I'm thinking about moving into a different state, just different variations based on the nuances of that state law. Am I correct?
I think that is true. It's the same thing. It's the same intake, right? Phone call comes in. It's the same having scheduling, doing the questionnaire, which is online, and it's the same having the consultation, which would be like this, right? Where we have this conversation and then drafting documents, sending them out, having the same, all the steps are identical. Like you said, there will be nuances based on differences in the actual state law, but the business practice itself is the same. I don't see that anything necessarily is going to change in terms of what our processes would be and how we use technology to go through those processes.
Sure. No, that makes good sense. You also made such an interesting comment too about family. And you and I have talked about that quite a bit, right? Family and the business. Yes. I have family members in my business. You have it as yours. That's definitely not a class in law school of what to do when you bring on a family member and how do you do that, especially with a virtual practice. Tell us your thoughts on that overall.
So they don't teach you anything about employees in law school.
That's true.
Managing employees, how to handle employee conflict, how to handle anything on the business aspect. They don't teach you about running a law firm in law school. But when it comes to, so my husband is my COO. He does all the things basically that my paralegal and I take care of most of the legal stuff, and he does everything else, all of our IT, all of our billing, all of our everything, dealing with vendors. And it's great because we have two very distinct skill sets and they don't overlap. So we don't, like, there's no real argument. I say, this is what we're doing from this sort of legal perspective, and he's okay. And then he says, this is what we're doing from this vendor perspective. And I'm like, okay, because he did the research.
Sure.
And it helps because we both have equal investment in the success. And so we are both equally tied to ensuring that the decisions that are made are in the best for the growth of the firm. And that helps, but there's also the sort of work-life balance aspect of it, right? So he works from home, I work from an office, so we do our own things separately. And then I come home from work and he's still working. And so he'll have questions. And I'm like, no, I'm off work. I already shut down my computer. You're going to have to wait until tomorrow. And so it's very important to set boundaries.
Yes,
it took us a long time to learn that, because he's been in this, we've been together doing this since I opened my firm in 15, early 16. And there was a time when it was a free for all of talking business, because both of us worked from home initially. I didn't have an office space initially. Both of us worked from home. And so it was literally nonstop. Mm-hmm. And we had to come to an agreement about where our boundaries were. Like, what does it mean to shut off for the day? What does it mean to shut down on the weekend? Like, where are these conversations off limits? No, we're not having this conversation here. And so those are, like, we've had to work through those to get to a point where we don't just burn out. And don't get me wrong, sometimes as the owner of a law firm, sometimes you have burnout. There's no getting around that.
Very true.
But it helps to have those boundaries set of, okay, I'm done with work for the day.
No, I think that's so important. I was sharing with you, as we've talked about different things, I'm an early riser. And a lot of times our family is early risers too. And I have to use a special sign on my door. Don't come in unless there's coffee involved. As many, any sort of distraction can set us back 20 minutes, 30 minutes, especially when right. we're working deeply in a project. And it's interesting too, having a home office myself, when the door is closed at night, and that could be at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that could be at 7 o'clock in the evening, that means no more conversation. And so we have those same exact challenges of text messages, the boundaries of with the employee, especially I find, because you made an interesting comment too, right? You're both equally invested in the business. Mm-hmm. And it's a blessing in my opinion. And sometimes it's a curse to have employees and team members who are as invested as you. Because for them, there may be times when boundaries aren't appropriate because it's that important to them and they see the growth of the business. Mm-hmm. And so balancing that out and having healthy conversations, because I have those same burnout days where I'm like, no, I've seriously been working for 16 hours, please stop. But that being said, that doesn't necessarily allow me to hear what that other person is saying. So I think right. that's a very interesting conversation. And I always find we don't ever want to discourage, especially our most engaged family members and career employees, but mm-hmm. we do, having that boundary conversation can seem hard at first, and also enforcing it. I find, much like when we have someone who's making a very critical error, jumping in immediately to fix it and having that real time, let's fix this right now. Mm-hmm. It shows that investment, and even that boundary conversation, I think really shows your acumen as a business leader of how we're going to build this together so it's sustainable and to move that forward. I love that. You're welcome. No, I also,
I'm picking it up as I go along.
To bring some levity in there too, I also shared with Angela that I have a sign on my door that says, unless there's a zombie apocalypse or you have coffee, come in. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you're on your own until this time. But also, I will say that as a practice point, they're not going to tell you that in law school either. No. You can put notes on your door. You can also put a spot for mail on your door. There's things like that to be able
to set boundaries.
Yes.
I think that's something that they don't teach you in law school. So you get into law school and everyone's like, billable hours, big law, the grind. It's the grind.
Yes.
And what they don't tell you is that doesn't have to be what legal practice is.
No.
Like, you can make your own, you can create your own kind of environment, and you do not have to work in toxic environments. You do not have to be part of the grind if you don't want to. And you can still practice law, and you can still do good in the world, and you can still use your brain and have these interesting conversations and this interesting analysis and do all these great legal things. But you do not have to be subject to this old school way of doing things. And I think that is one of the most important things that I learned after law school, is that while the law schools generally tend to be very motivated for students to get jobs in big law because it helps their stats, that may not be what the best interest of the student is.
Very
and
true.
So there should be a lot more options available to students, and understanding, like, When you were just saying invested employees might text or something outside of business hours, I don't have any access to my paralegal's cell phone. Her email is not on her cell phone. The office phone is not on her cell phone. When she leaves for the night, that is her time. Period.
That's great.
On the weekends, that is her time. We have very clear boundaries. I don't work in an area of law where there are like really emergencies. Generally speaking, there are not going to be a lot of emergencies in my area. And so I have the luxury of being able to say, these are the boundaries, and we don't sure. cross those. Now, of course, there might be something at some point in time that comes up where there might be something where I have to work on a weekend or something, but I don't pull my, that's not something I'm willing to necessarily pull my employees into unless there are like, this is truly life or death, which has never happened. And those are things that you can decide for yourself. Like you graduate law school, you're an adult, you can make your own decisions. And you're just not subject to that sort of grind, I guess, is the point.
No, I love that. And I love the fact that also you gave everyone listening permission, right? If no one's ever
seen you,
choose for yourself, decide. This is fantastic.
Right.
Yeah.
Decide for yourself what kind of lawyer you want to be. I went into law school not wanting to be a lawyer. I went into law school being told you can do anything with a JD, right? I came out of medical editing. I was working at the Heart Institute, the Texas Heart Institute, doing like editing papers for publication and helping get papers published for heart surgeons, right? Okay. And but everyone's, oh, you have to go to law school. You'd be a great lawyer. You have to go to law school. You'd be a great lawyer. And then my best friend was in the first year and she was like, you can do anything with a JD. You should come to law school. And so I was like, okay, fine. So I did the thing and I went to law school. I was in my 30s. I had a kid. I was married. I had already had a career and I went to law school. And it's so very different from what you're told, right? So if you're going to go to law school, then you're going to go to be a lawyer. Right. But you don't have to be the kind of lawyer that you see. I didn't want to be a lawyer because I'd never seen anything about the law that like interested me in working in those kinds of environments.
Interesting.
But I chose, so I chose differently, right? I made a different decision and I opened my own firm and I am trying to create an environment that is not that. It's so funny. My clients tell me, they're like, well, you're not anything like I expected. And I'm like, thank you. I don't want to be I don't want anyone to like know that I'm a lawyer and have any kind of unthought about what that means about me. I am just a person trying to help. And this is how I do that.
I love that.
And I think that pathway is available to other people as well. You just have to, it's hard work. You have to forge it.
Exactly. We have to get out there and do it ourselves and make it a
right.
reality. Which is a true, I think that's true in anything you do, whether you're listening to us and you're like, I won't be a lawyer anymore. I'm going to go in this other direction, but you still have.
And the more like I speak to more and more solos like myself who are opening practices and running practices, like trying to create healthy work environments with work-life balance and good vibes. Right.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And
I talk to more and more people doing that. And I think the more people who go into those sorts of law firms and the more people who open those law firms, we can change the trajectory of what we think of when we think of law firm life.
No, I love that. And we need to do that as a culture. We really, as an industry, as a law firm culture, I think that's so necessary across
Agreed.
The board. I know in some ways with me here, you're preaching to the choir, but I agree. I think you and I on a daily basis meet so many others who have never heard this. And that's really
right.
such an important message to get out there to help folks understand that. Interesting, when you said JD, though, I was thinking to myself, you have a couple other initials behind your name, CELA, I think. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so CELA, Certified Elder Law Attorney. It is through the National Elder Law Foundation. That is it's a special designation, a certification that you have to take a test for, and it's primarily in elder law. So there's additional training that comes along with managing cognitive disabilities, right? With managing incapacities, with knowing how to navigate these kind of tricky ethical questions that elder law attorneys run into when dealing with agents versus principals and dealing with these questions of who is your client? So who do you owe a duty to? There's kind of these sticky areas. And so and what is ageism and what is age discrimination? And so there's all these different sort of categories and areas of elder law. Again, it's a population, not necessarily an area of law. And so we are tested on all of these different aspects, from estate planning to guardianship to ethical considerations in managing sort of these complex ethical issues. And so once you pass the test, you get to be a CELA, certified elder law attorney. And I think that it's helpful for me because I've learned so much through studying for the CELA and then going to the sort of events put on by the National Elder Law Foundation. I've learned so much about how to navigate the idea of incapacity and helping people who are going through that.
No, that's fantastic. Angela, I can't thank you enough. All of this is fantastic. I know our listeners are just going to love it. If they want to find you, how does someone find you? Tell us about Texas and coming soon, Washington.
That's right. So the easiest way to get a hold of me is via email. So if you hear this and you want to reach out, I am happy to answer questions for people. Attorneys who reach out to me who are like, I'm new in this area and I don't know what to do about this thing, I will be on the phone with you. Like, mentorship is so important.
Very much.
I think that it's absolutely critical in this area to find a mentor. If you just want to chat about law school, by all means, I'm happy to give you my thoughts. There might be, these are one of those things that's unpopular ideas. But so my email address is Angela, A-N-G-E-L-A, at Odensky Law. That's odenskylaw.com. That's a good way to contact me. The office phone is 713-344-0730. You call and just leave a message with reception and I'll get you back to you. But that's the best way to contact me. And I would be happy to hear from any of the listeners about any questions that they might have about my journey, about what I'm doing, about straddling all of these different areas and issues and building a practice.
I love it. Thank you so much for being part of this, Angela. And everyone who's listening, thank you so much for tuning in for another episode of What I Wish I Learned in Law School. My name is Audrey Earhart, and we'll see you next time. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Thoughtful Entrepreneur Show. If you are a thoughtful business owner or professional who would like to be on this daily program, please visit upmyinfluence.com and click on podcast. We believe that every person has a message that can positively impact the world. We love our community who listens and shares our program every day. Together, we are empowering one another as thoughtful leaders. And as I mentioned at the beginning of this program, if you're looking for introductions to partners, investors, influencers, and clients, I have had private conversations with over 2,000 leaders asking them where their best business comes from. I've got a free video that you can watch right now with no opt-in or email required, where I'm going to share the exact steps necessary to be 100% inbound in your industry over the next 6 to 8 months with no spam, no ads, and no sales. What I teach has worked for me for more than 15 years and has helped me create 8 figures in revenue for my own companies. Just head to upmyinfluence.com and watch my free class on how to create endless high-ticket sales appointments. Make sure to hit subscribe so that tomorrow morning, that's right, 7 days a week, you are going to be inspired and motivated to succeed. I promise to bring positivity and inspiration to you for around 15 minutes every single day. Thanks for listening, and thank you for being a part of the Thoughtful Entrepreneur Movement.